Unemployment is really hard work. When I became unemployed, I was confused because the usual stories around persistence and effort and things just working out didn't match my experience at all. Unemployed people are stereotyped as ne'er-do-wells, layabouts, good-for-nothings, or bludgers, but is that true? In this series, I'll be chatting with 5 unemployed and underemployed people about how they got there, what their lives look like day to day, and why the usual stereotypes don't explain much. Hi, you're on 3CR Radical Radio, listening to Lives of the Unemployed, a show about what it's like to be unemployed. Today, I'll be chatting with Tilda Joy. You'll be familiar with Tilda from her excellent show on Friday nights, Slacker Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's a delight to be here on my favourite radio station in the world.
It is an absolute pleasure to have you. Welcome back to 3CR.
It's been a whole weekend.
I'm going to adjust my mic a little bit for the ears of the listeners, and I think we might be better than we were. This is my first ever show, and I'm terrified. But I've got Tilda with me, and she's a joy to be with.
You're a joy to be with, Antimony.
We're having joy together. Let's start before the beginning. Tell me about your family's employment situation as you were growing up.
Sure. So my dad was always like a tradie of kinds, like a plumber, roofer kind of thing. And often, I think there was one period in my like early childhood where the company I was working for went bankrupt.
Mm.
And since then, he's kind of been self-employed for the main part. I'm not in contact with him lately. I understand he does some work with the state government down in Tassie with the hydro and stuff from time to time. But most of it, I think he's been self-employed.
Mm-hmm.
My mum, I grew up in a bit of a religious cult. Mm. So my mum was not allowed to work until she divorced my dad.
Mm-hmm.
So she entered the workforce quite late, like maybe 27 or 28 years old.
Yeah, right.
Had a whole lot of life skills to kind of pick up along the way, such as opening her first bank account and getting a bill in her own name.
Yeah.
And so I can imagine that would have been quite harsh and steep back in the mid-90s when that happened.
Mm.
But she went from there to, you know, working as a photographer. Well, she enrolled in TAFE.
Mm-hmm.
Got a job as a photographer at the local newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And has ended up being like the photographic editor for a major newspaper elsewhere. So mum's done really well.
Yeah, what a champ.
Yeah.
Yeah. How was work talked about in your household as you were growing up?
Hmm. I mean, it was certainly something that you were... I mean, the religion shaped a lot of it.
Mm.
We're encouraged not to kind of work more than we needed to,
right,
and to like spend the majority of our time, you know, preaching and that kind of thing.
Mm.
That changed a lot when my parents broke up and I kind of got exposed to a bit more of the wider world. I think my mum was really keen to get me straight into work as soon as she could.
Mm.
That in like just doing odd jobs and things like, you know, picking up $10 here and there, kind of detailing the cars for the local newspaper kind of thing was one of my first gigs. And then when I was in year 7, I was at a very weird high school and they gave us every second Friday off so that teachers could do professional development. So every second Friday I was kind of doing trades work with my dad as well. So I think both my parents were quite keen for me to get into employment as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But also, certainly from my dad's side of things, it was kind of a means to an end because the apocalypse is coming and, you know, don't need to think too far ahead.
Yeah. So it's kind of like a worldly thing that kind of had to be done.
Yeah, yeah.
But the real work is telling the world about Jesus.
Yes, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. What did you imagine your career would look like when you were younger? Like when you were a small child and also like as you grew up?
Well, it was very hard for me to imagine, like when I was a small child, like what my, that there would be a future. I was kind of constantly told that I wouldn't, you know, by the time I was an adult, the world would have already ended and I wouldn't ever have to go into that kind of system of things.
Mm-hmm. So other little kids are going to be like, I'm going to be a firefighter, I'm going to be a doctor, and you're going to be like, I'm going to be on the right hand of Jesus.
Yeah, you send. Absolutely. Yeah. As I got a bit older, I kind of, well, my first like proper employed job was at Hungry Jack's when I was a 14-year-old. Mm-hmm. And I hated that job, and it still remains the hardest job I've ever done in my life. That I still have stress dreams about that job.
Really?
Oh, constantly, yeah. And I figured by the time I was ending school, I was making some money out of like music and teaching music and things like that. And my attitude was like, whatever I end up doing, like it needs to be better than this, and I hope it can be something that I like that doesn't destroy me spiritually like fast food does. I didn't really have any strong goals. I think by the time I finished my schooling, I wanted to be a musician, but that's not much of a career plan at all. I'd like to be a rock star. I think I'd still like to be a rock star, but I'm not, so yeah.
What did you spend your first paycheck on at your job at Hungry Jack's?
Oh, CDs and guitars and stuff.
Yeah, cool.
Went down to Red Hot CDs at the four-way shopping centre in Devonport and bought, yeah.
Do you remember what they were?
God, no. But yeah, I was always spending all my money on CDs and stuff. And then, yeah, when I was able to start buying some of the guitars and pedals and things that they sold there, that was really exciting. Also phone bills.
Oh, yeah.
Buying lots of credit.
Because every text like,
costs
like,
money, yeah. Yeah. Or you do the, remember how calls after 9, the first 15 minutes were free?
Uh-huh.
But if you didn't hang up before the 15 minutes, then you would get the whole call. So, yeah.
Yeah, sitting next to the kitchen timer.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was bad at that. So I'd rack up, I'd lose a lot of credit that way. Spend a lot of money on my phone.
All right, let's take a little break for a song and a CSA or a community service announcement. And then let's get into the rest of your working life. Would you like to announce the song that you brought in?
Sure. This song's by Crass and it's called Do They Owe Us a Living? And it goes for about 90 seconds. Bit of a strong language warning for the next 90 seconds because there's a few F-bombs in there. So if you've got little ears listening in,
put your hands over those ears for 90 seconds.
Yeah, otherwise they won't inherit the kingdom of God.
No! That I'm ripping him off! When I was new to Melbourne, I found a Food Not Bombs flyer on the road, and I had like this fist with a carrot, and carrots are my favourite vegetable. Yeah, I think they were asking for help doing stuff, and I got in touch.
We, I guess, rescue food
that would otherwise go to waste.
I like the aspect of sharing food and not making anyone feel obligated to pay anything for it.
We make a real point at Food Not Bombs of involving everyone who wants to be involved in whichever part they want to be involved in.
For more information, go to fnbmelb.noblogs.org. Food Not Bombs is a 3CR supporter. Food Not Bombs.
And we're back on 3CR Radical Radio with me, Antimony Deer, and Tilda Joy. And we're talking about lives of the unemployed, what it's like to be an unemployed person in Australia these days, through the personal stories of my interviewees. Welcome back, Tilda.
Thank you for having me. It's been a delight.
That song was Do They Owe Us a Living by Crass. So after Hungry Jack's, what came next?
Well, I think I was delighted by the end of year 10. I think I'd found my way into like a cover band and I had a few music teaching gigs and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I basically thought I could retire in heavy air quotes at that point because I was making enough money out of playing music, which I didn't consider to be real work, to pay for what I needed, basically, which was delightful, but completely unrealistic because musical work is work and it requires a lot of effort, a lot of late nights, a lot of, you know, practice and dedication, which is not necessarily bad things. I guess the worst things are playing at weddings. I think that was my least favorite thing. You know, when people have requests for awful songs that you don't know and they're really drunk and you've been there for hours and hours and hours and they didn't bother to feed you and that kind of thing. That took a little bit of the sheen off of things. Also playing in just hostile, rural Tasmanian pubs and things where sometimes the crowd was just, you know, didn't like the look of you and, you know, you had to kind of watch your back a bit in between sets and things. Learned to be a bit tough in that situation. But that was the bulk of my work. I moved to Launceston, to the Big Smoke, when I was 18, as soon as I could. And I think that was the first period where I found myself really in proper poverty. It took me quite a long time to be able to access Centrelink in the first place. My parents live separately, but Centrelink counts their incomes jointly, and neither of them have the disposable income to just pay my rent and bills and things. So there's an 18-month waiting period there where I had to prove that, A, I was earning enough money to be independent, and B, poor enough to to get on the dole in the first place. And that was a real struggle. That in multiple senses, finding the work was the toughest thing, because I could make a subsistence living from music, and we had some vegetables in the garden and stuff, which I would, you know, I was kind of a subsistence farmer for a little while there in Launceston. Very, very skint living, a lot of shoplifting, that kind of thing, but made my way through. The most difficult part was proving to Centrelink that I had made $1,000 a month over those 18 months. You had to have proved to them that you'd earned 18 grand over 18 months.
Because this would prove your independence, which means
Which was an almighty struggle. I went back to, I applied everywhere. And this was, of course, in 2009. So the global financial crisis had kind of hit. And I was, yeah, going for every single job that you could imagine in Launceston, including, you know, like I wasn't snobby about things. I was going for the supermarket jobs. I was applying for McDonald's and Hungry Jack's and KFC and all of them. By the time I was 19, that was almost old enough to command a full adult wage. So most of those jobs would far prefer to hire the 14-year-old me that they could pay. You know, my first job was a $6.50 an hour wage, or $6.15 rather. Yeah, and they'd rather pay that than a full adult wage. So it was very, very difficult. After quite a lot of struggling, I did find a job in hospitality. Mm-hmm. That was a fairly good gig because it was a small business that was quite like popular and trendy in the town. And I think actually like being seen around playing in bands helped me get that job, weirdly, because I was like one of the fashionable Launceston people, you know. But yeah, that was a real struggle. And
but we're not in Launceston now. We're in Melbourne.
Well, saved up enough money to get out of here and ended up in Melbourne in a tiny little terrace house in Clifton Hill. And that was my next bout of like serious unemployment, like really, really struggling. And the bar for getting into hospitality gigs in Melbourne it was so much higher, so much higher. Like I could pour a coffee, I could wait tables, you know, but I wasn't like, you know, top level barista type stuff.
And that's what people in Melbourne wanted.
Yeah, people want really good coffee in Melbourne. You know? And like, and tell you what, in 2009, no one in Launceston knew how to make really good coffee, or at least they didn't teach me.
So you come to Melbourne and you didn't have a lot of a support system, and you'd had some skills but found that they weren't really in demand here in Melbourne.
Yeah, and especially in the music scene where, yeah, I didn't have a roster of students I could teach. I didn't have a bunch of venues where I could book gigs or where they would proactively contact me to book my band or anything like that, really starting from zero. And yeah, that was, and plus I was living with a partner at the time and we did the ridiculous thing of, you know, declaring our relationship.
Silly thing to do.
Always lie to the government if you're ever given an opportunity. Which, yeah, made things really difficult because we're living on far less money than even the minuscule, what was it at that point, JobSeeker?
New Start.
New Start back then, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because the light of your love means that you don't need to use as much electricity.
That's right. Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. We can all hover around the one candle for you.
Because it's romantic because you're in love.
It's so romantic.
Yeah, and you need to eat less.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, cold bath.
Because of the butterflies in your stomach, that sort of thing.
So, yeah, struggled at that a lot and basically didn't find work at all until I got into university and and until like a few years, like probably my second or third year of university when I started getting involved with some of the research students and some of the PhD candidates there and helping them out with stuff, which was a godsend at the time. I was like, wow, you can make money from being some kind of boffin, you know? Whoa. And yeah, having been living on fresh air for, you know, 4 or 5 years at that point, it was such a change. I thought this is fantastic. You know, I can do 4 or 5 months of work and at the end, they'll give me $1,000. Terrible deal. And the, you know, the casualization of universities and the grant seeking and all the work that goes into establishing funding for a research project at a university is just represents a mountain of unpaid labor. And that really hit me once I left university and had way more time on my hands and started, you know, okay, I really need to get some more income in now. Found just a retail job at Officeworks. And that again was another huge revolution to me. Like, wow, they pay you on time. You get superannuation. You know, I wasn't getting penalty rates or anything like that. Like it was before a lot of the improvements to conditions in the retail and fast food sector had picked up. But I was just astounded at like, oh, you know, like every minute of work I do, I get paid for. And as soon as the clock finishes, I walk out. You know, that just blew my mind again. And I thought I was the luckiest person in the world to have a, you know, 9-hour-a-week casual gig at Officeworks. You know?
Let's take a very short break to listen to a community service announcement about Centrelink level support. And then let's get to the current day.
Yeah.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
My apologies for traumatising the audience with that hold music. You're on 3CR Radical Radio. I'm talking with Tilda Joy for my series, The Lives of the Unemployed. Now, you have a show called Slacker Radio.
Yes, I do.
And you're happily unemployed these days. Can you describe the circumstances that led to your current situation?
Sure. I mean, it all started in 2020 when the novel coronavirus of 2019 visited our shores. Mm-hmm. And I was working in Officeworks at the time. And I could see a looming disaster, basically. Mm. It was a very unsafe environment. And there were weird exceptions being carved out for just general retail purchasing, shopping, mm-hmm. you know, at the start of things with the lockdowns and stuff like that. There were no precautions taken and people were getting really, really sick around me, mm. including in my own home. And I was like, okay, this could go very, very bad. I basically got myself sacked from that job, mm-hmm. And went on Centrelink once again. Mm-hmm. And the first little while was pretty great because it was the Morrison COVID bonus, double Centrelink livable wage.
It was a relief.
It was more than I was earning working 35 hours a week at Officeworks. It was incredible. I was actually better off being on the dole and not putting myself and my housemates at risk of COVID.
Mm. Which is the point of those payments, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But yeah. You had to, you know, there were people who were considered essential worker, you know, no need to open up that can of worms, mm-hmm. but there was a whole lot going on there. Basically, I thought, okay, I'll try and pivot into nursing. That's something I've always mm-hmm. really wanted to do, and studying seemed like an option. Mm-hmm. Didn't know how long this whole thing was going to go on for. That was really difficult for a number of reasons. I think the number one reason, again, is this huge corpus of unpaid labour mm-hmm. that they expect you to do. You know, you need to basically be financially stable outside of anything else and then do a full-time job for a month or two every mm-hmm. year, which is absolutely wild. Not, you know, not achievable by me. And as soon as I got offered a normal job, for the first time organizing in unions, I took it straight away because mm-hmm. that's also something I wanted to do for ages, but I'm mm-hmm. not going to grind away with all this free labor, at this nursing gig. Mm-hmm. A couple of years down that road, I ended up getting, COVID mm-hmm. and that just absolutely knocked me out mm-hmm. again. And even with the most understanding workplace who believes in, you know, workers' rights and disability justice and would give me the most flexible hours in the world, I could not get myself into the workforce anymore. I was mm-hmm. just not reliable enough anymore. Mm-hmm. I, yeah, could not hold down a job at all. And that led to like a long period of, you know, trying to chase down disability payments, doing like Uber Eats gigs to just kind of cover the basics and this kind of thing, getting hassled by all the job centers and that. Culminated last year in actually receiving my disability pension, which is, yeah, absolutely fantastic. And it's transformed my life. Like, I am so much more able now to volunteer here at 3CR. And volunteer work is the kind of work that I can do because I give exactly what I can to this place and nothing more. I don't have to sacrifice, you know, my well-being to actually have a place in the world anymore.
The work is on your terms.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a volunteer. If I don't like it, I'll tell them to shut it. And good thing is I do like it. I love it.
So what does a fairly typical weekday look for you now, like now?
Most of the day I'm in bed. Like the vast majority of the day I'm in bed. A couple of days a week I'll come into the station and I'll be here for maybe 6 or 7 hours. And that's a big, big push. But yeah, if I do that, then the next couple of days I'll definitely need to just be doing bed rest. It's a good day at home if I can kind of wash the dishes and do some vacuuming. Basically, all my physical activity happens here at the radio station, you know. Otherwise, I'm just generally lying in my bed. Sometimes I've got enough energy to go and do like a video game stream and hang out with people online. But that's about it, you know. It's lying in bed watching anime, doing house chores, or being here at 3CR. That's kind of it.
So if you're going to give advice to someone who was about to become unemployed or recently unemployed, what would you want them to know?
I would want them to know it's not your fault if you can't find something. The job market is messed up. There's lots of perverse incentives in there to take people who are either more or less vulnerable than you, you know, whether they're more vulnerable because of visa reasons or age or things like that, or just they benefit from privilege. There's lots of reasons why people get systematically looked over, and that's not your fault. That's a problem with our discriminatory hiring policies and the policy of, you know, a 5% target rate for unemployment that we have basically a and that would be considered, yeah, I don't know, conservative or whatever. Wayne Swan famously said that's a good place for it to be. We have a basically explicitly stated reserve army of labor out there. 1 in 20 people must be part of it, and it's not your fault that you're there. And they want you to feel like you're lazy. They want you to feel like you can't do anything right and that you don't deserve to eat. But, you know, that's... Every time I felt lucky, I've been proven wrong. I'm not lucky. I deserve this.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, that's an amazing place to finish. You've been listening to Lives with Unemployed on 3CR Radical Radio. Coming up next is the Black Block, and we'll let you go with the song Jobless Romantic by Hello Tut Tut.
Congratulations on your first show, Anthony.
Thank you.